This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 33. Hello, welcome to Marathon Training Academy, found online at marathontrainingacademy.com. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, Angie talks about how to choose a marathon that's just right for you. And in the quick tip segment, at the end of this episode, she'll talk about where you can donate your old running shoes. So speaking of old running shoes, Angie, I guess you have a pair of old running shoes now because you've got a couple new pairs.
That's right. Actually, we both got new pairs of shoes this week.
Yes, I bought a pair of Brooks. I don't know, I'd never even heard of that brand.
Really?
Yeah. But I took in my, I don't have any complaints with my old ones. I was wearing Mizunos. And I thought, I'm just going to try something else and something a little more cushioning this time and see how it goes. And what about you? What do you got?
Well, I've been sticking with the ASICS Gel Nimbus for probably a couple of years now, so I'm pretty satisfied with those. But I did get something a little bit different. I am now the proud new owner of some Vibram Five Fingers.
Well, it's about time.
I know. Well, I know we had done that podcast several months ago about barefoot and minimalistic running, and I had said at that point, you know, after I have this baby and build my running base back up, I'm going to get a pair of those, and so I have them in my hot little hands now, or on my hot little feet, I should say.
Yeah, and why are they called five fingers? Shouldn't they be called five toes?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the idea was behind that, but
Vibram five digits.
Something like that. I've had a few comments. I posted a picture of them on Facebook, and somebody asked, do they come in any other color besides cadaver gray?
So, yeah, but what's the strategy for getting your feet used to that?
Well, you definitely need to build up really slowly. So for the last couple of days, I've just been wearing them around the house, and then today I ran half a mile in them, which sounds really puny, but I want to do this the right way, and you know me, I'm not a big risk taker, so definitely going to start out slow and easy and try to ease into them for my shorter runs. You know, at this point, I'm not interested in running a marathon in them or anything, but I definitely do want to build up the strength in some other muscles.
So if you buy a pair of shoes like that, you don't want to strap them on and then go do 3 miles in the first day.
Right. You're going to end up very sore and maybe possibly injured if you try to do too much too soon in them.
And for those that don't know, the Vibram Five Finger shoes are those shoes with like no cushioning on bottom, and each toe is encapsulated in its own little house.
Yeah, and in fact, they're hard to get on for the first few times. I've heard people say that it gets easier, but my little toe does not want to be separated from the toe next to it, so I like have to practically break a sweat to get the shoes on. But once they're on, they're comfortable. But that little toe doesn't like to be alone at this point.
And you've also recently signed us up for another marathon and signed me up for another half marathon in the state of Washington. And so that's going to be nice. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we're going to combine our family vacation this year with a marathon. In my book, A Perfect Thing to Do on Vacation is Run a Marathon. So I've been wanting to do the North Olympic Discovery Marathon for a couple of years now. And so it just, the timing was going to work out perfectly, and we're kind of both in the place to be able to do that race, so we're excited about doing that one. It's very scenic, and I think it's going to be a nice, smaller marathon.
The North Olympic Discovery Marathon is on June 5th, and it goes from Sequim to Port Angeles, and it's on the beautiful Olympic Peninsula there in the state of Washington. And my dad is going to run it with me also. We're going to do the half marathon together. So
yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. So if anyone out there is going to be doing that marathon or wants to do that marathon, be sure to shoot me an email, and we'd be glad to meet up with you.
Yeah, you can send it to Angie@marathontrainingacademy.com. So on the last podcast, we had your sister on with us, and you coached her through her first marathon. And you got a couple comments about how similar your voices are. Yeah, some people even had a hard time distinguishing between you and her.
Yeah, we did. And actually, there's a third sister, and she sounds even more like me. So growing up at our house, we had to always identify ourselves when we answered the phone, because with three girls that sounded the same, it was kind of confusing to people.
Yeah, so before we married, I would call the house, and you would answer, and you would say, "Hello, this is Angie." And it just seemed like you had such proper phone etiquette. It was quite impressive.
Yeah, you mocked me for it.
I mean, the phone rang at my house, I'd say, what do you want? No, it probably goes back to your days of working at McDonald's as a teenager at the drive-thru window and having to say,
thank you for choosing McDonald's. May I take your order, please?
How many years did you work there?
Oh, I started when I was 14, and I worked there off and on through high school, so...
Saving money for college.
That's right.
And you went to college when you were, like, 15, didn't you?
No, I was 17. It was a great place to work as a teenager because it was flexible hours, and you know, your friends would come in and get to see them and everything.
Is that where you learned all your health and nutrition secrets?
Definitely. No, people would kind of make fun of me because I would bring my lunch a lot to work, and I'd bring carrot juice and things like that, and they kind of thought I was weird, but, you know, I just kind of got tired of eating the food there after a while, and, you know, when you see it come out of the freezer until it gets cooked, it kind of loses a little bit of its appeal.
I wonder if that happens to people that work at restaurants, like any restaurant. After you work there enough, you just get sick of the food that you serve.
I think so. The smell kind of permeates your hair and your clothing, and you just smell it all the time, and it just suddenly isn't so wonderful.
Now, you wouldn't think that McDonald's would be the best nutrition plan for training for a marathon, but there was just a guy who just recently ran a really fast marathon who ate nothing but McDonald's for like 30 days, right?
That's right. Yeah, his name was Joe D'Amico, and he became known as McRunner. And he was trying to PR at the LA Marathon, and so he followed a McDonald's diet for 30 days leading up to the race, and he did actually PR. He finished the race in 2 hours, 36 minutes, and 14 seconds. So he's a fast guy. It's interesting, on his blog, McRunner.com, he lists everything that he ate from there, and so it's not really what you would expect. He actually did, you know, eat more of the healthier options, and he didn't eat large quantities of some of the more fattening things like fries and burgers and things like that.
That's nice that they're offering healthier things now.
Yeah, they've really responded to people's needs and desires, you know, so. And this guy has raised to date about $30,000 for the Ronald McDonald Charity House. So he really did a good thing.
Yeah, and I also saw that a sumo wrestler just finished a marathon. What about that? Tell us about it.
Yeah, this guy named Kelly Needing, and he's from the United States, and he just set the world record for the heaviest person to complete a marathon. I guess he was 400 pounds at the start, and he did the LA Marathon also, and he finished in 9 hours, 48 minutes, and 52 seconds.
And by the time he finished, he was 300 pounds.
Not quite. I think he lost around 4 pounds, but he suffered from ravenous blisters. He told the Los Angeles Times, I did it, but it was hell. Pure hell.
We should put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
So, wow, if somebody of that size and magnitude can finish a marathon, then anybody can.
That's right. I don't recommend that you go into it at that weight. It's just going to be really hard on your joints and everything. But,
yeah.
You know, it is possible. People walk marathons all the time. So, you know, it depends on your goals and everything.
All right, well, you have two shout-outs that you want to make, and these are a couple of guys that have accomplished some pretty awesome things.
That's right. These come from Facebook, and if you haven't joined us on Facebook already, come over to our page and like us. I think we've got 2,448 fans right now, so
all right.
It's pretty exciting to see everyone over there. The first one comes from Brian. He says, I just finished the Los Angeles Marathon 3 hours ago. It has been 18 years since my last one. I'm 54 years old and had gotten overweight and out of shape over the years. Last year, I started running mostly to control my weight, and I discovered MTA podcasts. Angie and Trevor inspired me to try a full marathon again. 5 months later, 30 pounds less, I finished LA Marathon strong and injury-free, which was my goal. By the way, the race was in a freezing cold winter storm with heavy rain, very unusual Southern California weather. I'm planning to train better and trim my time by 30 minutes at next year's event. This is all because of your inspiration, guys. Thank you for what you do. Keep it up, Brian. And Brian's also part of MTA Member, and so it was really inspiring to hear his story and all he's accomplished. The next message comes from John, and he says, thanks, Angie and Trevor, for putting together such a great podcast and training schedule. I'm not sure I would have completed my goal of finishing a marathon without that support system. Today I ran the Modesto Marathon in nasty weather, rain and 30-mile-per-hour winds. I ran it in 3 hours, 19 minutes, and 5 seconds. I qualified for the Boston Marathon with 55 seconds to spare. What a rush. Thank you, guys.
And that's neat to me because I am from Modesto. I was born and raised there. And my dad and mom live there still. And my dad was actually at the Modesto Marathon himself. He didn't finish that fast, but...
He still finished despite all those horrible weather conditions.
Yeah. So congratulations, Brian and John, for reaching some amazing milestones in your life.
That's right. We're proud of you.
Okay, so on this episode, we're going to talk about choosing a marathon that's just right for you. This is marathon season, and maybe you've probably already ran one or chosen one, but I'm sure you're going to do another one.
That's right. Or if you're thinking in the future of what your first marathon is going to be, we want to give you some things to think about so you can be best prepared to choose the one that's going to suit you the best.
So Angie's going to give you some great tips for choosing a race and preparing for it, because nobody wants to be unprepared when race day comes.
That's right. Well, spring marathon season is here, and I ran across some interesting statistics from 2010. This would be statistics for the United States. I don't have any worldwide stats, but I suspect they're fairly similar, probably. For the first time, the number of runners crossing the finish line in U.S. marathons passed the 500,000 mark in 2010. So 507,000 people approximately finished a marathon, and I believe the half marathon stats comes in somewhere over 1 million. In the view of some running experts, the recession inadvertently has given a boost to a sport that costs relatively little and can help combat stress. They're thinking that in 2011, the numbers are going to jump even more because several popular races have already sold out in record time. For example, the Boston Marathon sold out in 8 hours. The Marine Corps race in Washington, D.C. filled up in 28 hours. And the Chicago Marathon filled up in 31 days. So obviously people are flocking to some of those more popular races. But helping handle demand is an ever-growing number of new marathons. More than 35 new marathons, a record number, launched in 2010, according to Running USA, bringing the total to more than 625 U.S. marathons. And for the third consecutive year, the gender division among finishers remained relatively unchanged. About 59% are men and 41% are women.
We should host a marathon. We'll start at our house. And
be a nice flat race.
The Marathon Train Academy official marathon and half marathon for marathoners.
Wow. Sounds inspiring. Now, the percentage of marathon finishers age 40 and older was about 46%. Runners between the ages of 20 and 39 made up approximately 52% of the finishers, and the under 20 crowd only accounted for 2%. Now, for men, the median time for finishing was 4 hours and 16 minutes, and for women, the time was 4 hours and 42 minutes. So I just thought those were interesting statistics for last year's marathon numbers.
Yeah, it's always nice to hear that something that you do and that you enjoy is becoming more popular around the world. More people are discovering how great it is to run, and it's awesome.
It is, yeah, it's wonderful. With a growing number of half and full marathons available, you now have a lot more options. I commonly get asked what factors a person should consider when choosing a marathon. First of all, I always say make sure you have your running base built up. You don't want to jump into a training plan before you have a solid running base. For an example, my mom called me the other day, and she's decided recently that she's going to run a half marathon. And I'm really excited for her. And she called to ask me questions about when to start a training plan. But at this point, she doesn't really run more than once a week, so I encouraged her to build up her running base first and shoot for doing a fall half marathon. So what do I mean by a running base? First, you need to be comfortable running 3 to 5 miles, about 3 times per week, and do that for 4 to 6 months before you start a half or a full marathon training plan. The running base is the foundation on which you'll build your training. If your foundation is weak, then the chances that you'll get injured or have a less than satisfying experience are high. Now, it's okay to have a race that you're aiming for in mind, even if you're still building your running base. In fact, having a goal can help you stay motivated and challenge yourself. So when you go to choose a race, there are several different factors that you might want to consider. Matching the right marathon to your goals and personality can make for a truly memorable experience.
Boy, I don't know if I've heard anybody talk about matching a marathon to your personality.
Really?
Did you read that in a book or did you just make that up?
I made it up, I think.
Wait, say that more confidently.
Well, I mean, you know, there's no really nothing new under the sun.
So somebody probably had the idea before you, but
possibly.
As far as you know, it was original.
I think it's unique to me.
Okay.
Who knows? I do a lot of reading about running, and so something may have stuck in my brain randomly. And
all right, so now you're going to have to elaborate. How does one choose a race based on their personality type?
The first factor to look at before choosing your marathon is the timing. The ideal marathon will come at a time for you when you've built up a solid running base and you've had time to complete a training plan. Now, most training plans for a half marathon are around 12 weeks, and a full marathon is going to take approximately 16 to 20 weeks to train for. Another factor to consider is whether the training and race will come at a good time for you. For example, it's probably best not to consider doing your first marathon at the same time another huge life event occurs, like getting married, starting college, moving, changing jobs, things like that. For best results, make sure that your training comes at a time that you're not overwhelmed personally or professionally. So, you know, try to think ahead in your calendar. And, you know, training for a marathon does require a time commitment. So make sure that you can commit the time needed for it and you're not going to be stressing yourself out too much to get it accomplished. The second thing to consider would be the weather. What kind of weather do you want to train in? You also want to consider how much time you'll have to train outside before the race. It's important to do at least 50% of your training runs outdoors on a surface that mimics your marathon route. So for someone living in a cold climate, it might be very hard, although not impossible, to get your long training runs done in the dead of winter to prepare for a spring marathon. Now, if you're from a warmer climate, think about doing long training runs in hot, humid conditions. Ideally, you'll want about 3 months of outdoor running to prepare. Now, the earlier part of your training could probably be done on a treadmill, but you really want to do most of it on the road so that you can prepare your body for the experience. Another thing you want to consider is what kind of weather you want to race in. It starts to get really hot by May in certain locations. The ideal temperature for running a marathon is around 50 degrees. So that's why you'll see the bulk of races scheduled in the spring and fall. The top 3 months for marathons are October, November, and May, and July and August have the fewest. So if you thrive in warm weather, choose a warmer race. Just realize that for a January race in Florida, it may be 30 degrees still, and you may not have that warm race that you were wanting. It's best to research the type of weather that is typical for the location for that time of year. Most marathon websites have a list of what the temperature was on race day for the previous few years. So knowing what weather to plan for can make your experience that much better. Now, of course, you can't control every variable like weather. In fact, this March, some of the California marathons experienced colder than normal temperatures. The third consideration would be the size of the marathon. Do you want a larger, well-established race or a smaller, more personal marathon? Think about your personality type. Do you thrive on organization, crowd support, and thousands of other runners? Some of the benefits of a larger, well-established race include experienced race directors, lots of volunteers, a streamlined organizational system, probably a large racing field, and more crowd support. But the benefits of smaller races include them being more personal and having a more laid-back atmosphere. So really think about what you want out of your racing experience. Now, if you're from the big city, you'll probably feel most comfortable in a large urban event. Now, since I was raised in Montana, I feel very out of my element in a big city. So a smaller, more scenic marathon would probably fit my personality better.
Yeah, and talk about what you told me a couple days ago, how if you had to drive yourself to the marathon and get yourself there in a big city and run it, that you probably would just stay home.
Right. You have to think about things like logistics. If I had to get myself to the New York City Marathon and deal with things like traffic and crowds, it would just be so stressful that I would be better off doing a smaller, more close to home race. Now, some people, you know, they're very comfortable in that environment. They thrive on that kind of thing. It'd just be right up their alley. So you kind of have to know yourself. Now, since I have you as such a great parking space finder, you know, if we do a larger race, I don't really worry about those kind of details. But if it was me driving myself there, I would probably be more picky about, you know, some of those logistics. Now, it's, you know, good sometimes to do something that's outside of your comfort zone. But if you're going into your first marathon, you probably don't want to be stressed out with details like how to get there and find your way and this and that. You probably want to find something that's more comfortable for you, more close to home.
Okay, so what about finances?
Definitely. You have to decide how much money you want to or can spend. Your personal finances will probably dictate which marathon is an option for you. Remember that you'll have the race registration fee, you'll have running gear, travel expenses, hotels, meals, and any recreation surrounding the event, too. So if money is tight, you may want to look closer to home to eliminate some of those expenses. Some of the best value marathons, according to Runner's World, are the Fargo, North Dakota Marathon and the one in Akron, Ohio. On the other hand, if money is not really a problem for you, you may want to make a vacation out of the marathon experience.
In that case, you might not want to go to Akron, Ohio.
That's right, or Fargo, North Dakota. Nothing against those areas, but you know, you may want to try something like travel destination, go to Europe or New Zealand, Disney World, New York City, or Hawaii, one of those.
And when you do a race on your vacation, it actually gives you the satisfaction like you accomplished something. If you're like a type A personality, you thrive on accomplishments.
Well, sometimes, you know, you go on vacation, you eat too much, you sit around too much, and it kind of just feels like, ugh, after a while. So having some kind of activity built into it can definitely make it a better experience for you, whether you're going to be hiking, running, cycling.
Mud wrestling.
Do something outdoors. I mean, at least for my personality, I like to relax, but I also like to feel like I've accomplished something. The fifth consideration would be travel. How far away from home can you travel? This will be dictated to some extent by your finances, your family commitments, and how much time you can get off from work. Traveling to your next race may sound like an exciting experience until you realize that it may mean passports, international flights, maybe a new language, and dietary changes. So if you fly to a race, ideally you'll want to arrive 2 days before the marathon. If you try to arrive the day before and your flight gets delayed, you may miss the race expo and not get to pick up your race packet. So that could mean you don't get to run the marathon. Plus, spending the entire day before the race sitting down may not be the best preparation. You could be stiff and sore and not really feel ready to run. You'll also want to plan on not flying home until the day after the race. You don't know exactly what will happen on race day, and it'd be very stressful to have to rush to the airport to make a flight after running 26.2 miles. Now, if you're going to be going to an international race, you'll want to think about things like change of time zone and adjusting your body to a different time and maybe getting up earlier. You know, that can all factor into how well you perform on race day.
Well, we just want everybody to have as much fun as possible at your marathon, so we're giving you a heads up about things ahead of time.
That's right. Yeah, we don't want you to be scared off from the marathon experience because all these things seem overwhelming. But it's good to think about these things in advance so that you do have a great experience.
And it's worth getting a nice hotel. That's what I thought.
That's right. Yes. Here's another one from personal experience. Don't try to save money and end up staying like an hour away from the race site and get stuck in traffic on the way there and wonder if you'll even make it for the starting gun.
Well, we ended up in this neighborhood in Nashville because I was looking for the cheapest motel. And we like heard gunshots all night.
Not gunshots, but there was like sirens going off and, you know, kind of this vague sense of maybe you weren't safe.
When you crawl in the bed, like you feel things crawling on you.
The sheets are kind of all balled up, you know. So it's better if you can to find a hotel that's close to the starting line, maybe even within walking distance. It's just going to make the experience a lot less stressful for you. And we promise you, it'll be worth a few extra bucks.
And I've decided not to be a cheapskate in life. Every time I've tried to be a cheapskate, it's just blown up in my face some way. So, like, for example, that hotel that we stayed in Nashville. So when we ran in Little Rock, I decided I'm going to get a hotel closer to the race, even though it's going to be more expensive because it's a downtown hotel. So we stayed at La Quinta. And it was pretty nice.
And it wasn't really that much more expensive, really.
And it was a nice place. They had a nice continental breakfast in the morning. And the cool part about this is, and I didn't even plan for this, the course ended up running right by our hotel. And Angie's mom was watching our kids while we were out running. And they were downstairs eating breakfast in the little dining area, sitting right by the window. And they got to see all of us run by. And I wasn't even expecting to go by our hotel, but there I was running by, and they had a window seat, and I see all my kids waving at me, and I stopped and waved back at them, and it was like kind of a magic moment for me in that race.
That's awesome. I don't even remember running by our hotel, so either I blanked it out, or it was that part where the half and the full marathon course deviated.
No, I think you have a really bad sense of direction.
Well, that is true.
This goes back to Angie and liking small races because big cities she gets confused in.
Okay, I wouldn't even make it to the race. It was up to me.
You got to understand, she grew up in a town of 500 people.
GPS was built for people like me who cannot read maps. All right, before you mock me anymore, let's go on to number 6, which would be support. Think about, will you be having anyone come to support you on race day? If it's important for you to have lots of friends and family at the race to watch you run, it might be best to choose a location closer to home. However, if you'd rather blend into the pack and not have people making a big deal over you, a race far away from home might be ideal. Now, I've done it both ways. For my first few races, Trevor would take me to the starting line, and then I wouldn't see him until the race was over. Usually he'd have to take care of the kids or, you know, just meet me at the end. But in Little Rock, I had my sister Amy, who didn't run the race, and my dad there watching, and it was very motivating to see them along the course, you know, yelling support and encouragement.
And profanity.
Yeah, right.
No, just kidding.
Now, if you do have people coming to the race to support you, make sure that they know what to expect. You're probably not going to want to spend the day before the race on foot touring the whole city with them or eating exotic food. In addition, you probably won't want to go clubbing the night before or experience much of the city nightlife. Even someone who wants to watch TV in your room until late at night might drive you crazy, too. Now, I'm looking pointedly at Trevor at this point because previous races, before he became a runner himself, he would like to, you know, just watch random things on TV. And pretty soon, like at 11 o'clock at night, I'd be like, okay, the TV is going off now. I need to get some sleep.
You got to understand, we don't have any channels on our TV.
That's right.
And so it's kind of a novelty to me every time I go to a hotel.
Whoa, 100 channels.
Yeah.
So I would have to literally hide the remote if I wanted to get any sleep.
Yeah, we have a TV. We watch movies, but we just don't have cable. We just stare at our computers all day.
So, you know, I was used to just, you know, being there by myself, and it was fine. I'm not the type of person who needs a lot of support or seeing someone every few miles to encourage me. But it is nice, I have found out, now that I've had it both ways.
And I have changed, baby.
That's right.
I've gone from couch to half marathoner.
Exactly. I love these changes. Now, after the race, you'll probably be very tired and sore, so you'll want your support people to understand that you might just want to take a shower, eat, and take it easy the rest of the day. Now, if you'll be traveling to and from the race by yourself, make sure that you cut yourself some slack. I really don't recommend getting in the car and driving long distances right after running a marathon. Either plan to leave the area the next day or find someone who can drive for you. It's best to move around as much as possible after you run. And number 2, you may have some post-race delirium or fatigue and may not be safe on the road. All right, number 7, think about the race specifics. What type of race atmosphere do you prefer? Do you want a more serious race or a more festive atmosphere, maybe one with bands or costumes? Some marathons are built around having fun or the party theme. Things like New York City is known to be a real fun marathon, or the Rock and Roll Series, maybe the Mardi Gras Marathon, Walt Disney World. In Little Rock, they kind of had a fun theme and a really obnoxiously huge medal. There are some more serious marathons, like the Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon, or there's the Bataan Memorial Death March, which honors World War II veterans. So those are probably more serious races. The St. George Marathon is known to be very organized. So, you know, just kind of think about your personality again. You'll also want to consider the terrain. Are you trying to achieve a specific time goal and you want a flat, fast course? Or do you want to see some beautiful scenery and you don't mind some challenging hills? So you'll want to look at the course details, like the elevation, if it's an out-and-back course or if it's a loop, before you register. You won't want to do the Pikes Peak Marathon in Colorado for your first marathon or if you're trying to qualify for Boston.
No, definitely not. Not Pikes Peak Marathon.
That's like 13.1 miles up and then 13.1 down. So it's just really hard on the body. The final thing to consider is your goal. Now, if it's your first marathon, you might want to consider picking a somewhat flat course or something that mimics where you train. It can also be helpful to have nice weather to train in. A loop course can mean more spectators are there to cheer you on, so that might be important to you. Finding a race closer to home can help decrease race day and anxiety, because you'll be more familiar with the area and you won't have to worry about getting lost or new food or a new culture. Good races for a first-time experience include the Walt Disney World Marathon, Rock and Roll Arizona, the Napa Valley Marathon, the Flying Pig Marathon in Cincinnati, the Ogden Marathon in Utah, Fargo, Steamtown, Portland, and the Marine Corps Marathon. Those are some of the races that have been known to be a good first-time marathon. Obviously, I don't have experience running all these races, so this is kind of the combined wisdom of people from Runner's World and different online sources.
Someday, you'll run all those races.
That's cool, right. It's my goal to, you know, do the 50-state club and different things like that, so I hope to be able to speak about, you know, many different marathons with personal experience.
Really? You want to be in the 50-state club?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You never told me that.
Really? I think the longer that you do races, you kind of develop this list of ones, maybe it's an unspoken list, obviously, in my case, that you want to do. So I know it'll probably take me a few years, but I would definitely like to do 50 states. Now, you may be looking for a destination marathon. If you want a fun time or a change of scenery, combining a vacation and a marathon can be great. The travel to the race and the few days leading up to it will have some stress, but the post-race scenery, the food, the culture will more than make up for it. Be sure to do your research to eliminate as many variables as possible. Some good destination marathons include the Big Sur Marathon, Lake Placid Marathon, Mount Desert Island Marathon in Maine, Honolulu Marathon, and the Vancouver, BC Marathon.
Man, we are there.
Oh, yeah.
Fork up the money, Angie. We are going to those races.
What we need to do is we need to be able to be at the expos and everything so we kind of have an excuse to be there and then run the race the next day. And
yes, I'm going to sell my Release the Kraken t-shirt at the expo.
Millions of copies or dozens, as someone on Facebook said.
Yeah, somebody says, you should make a shirt. It'll sell millions or at least a dozen. Thanks, man.
He was a realist.
Chances are he won't even buy one.
I'm sure he will.
You'd be like, wait, that's ugly. I'm buying it.
I want a friendly-looking Kraken.
We'll release the Kraken on that guy if he can buy one.
Now, maybe that you're looking for a personal record or a Boston qualifier. Now, if your sole focus is setting a personal best or qualifying for Boston, your selection process probably starts with the terrain. It's best to find a course that does two loops or is an out and back. That way you'll be able to identify any trouble spots and plan accordingly. Now, if you've run more than one marathon, you probably won't be as concerned about the weather. You'll probably have all the needed training gear and the mental toughness to stick it out if the weather goes bad. Check to see the general finishing times for your age group and what percentage of past participants have qualified for Boston on that course. Some good fast marathons include the Wineglass Marathon in Corning, New York, Steamtown in Pennsylvania, Austin, Texas, Chicago, Berlin, Seoul International, Paris, Milan, and Hamburg, Germany.
We'll do all those next year.
Actually, I want to do the Wineglass Marathon in Corning, New York this fall, hopefully.
Wow.
So,
yeah,
I don't know if I told you that, but better get you in on those plans soon.
You are covetous.
I am. I covet marathons.
This is like a kid, you know, looking through the Lego catalog. I want all these.
I know. And I want them now.
Yeah.
After you've chosen what race to do, you'll want to find a training plan that suits your needs. Now, if you're a beginner, find a plan that's specifically for beginners. If you want to use a run-walk method, there are plans that incorporate that strategy. The type of mileage you run every week will also help determine the plan you choose. If you want to run high mileage, choose a plan that has you running 5 to 6 days per week. However, if your body can't handle high mileage or if you're prone to injury, choose a plan that uses 3 to 4 running days per week and incorporates cross-training. You can check out our free training plans on our blog.
Yeah, Angie has beginner and intermediate training plans, and they're based on a 3-day-per-week running protocol.
With cross-training built in.
Yes. And that definitely is the best way to do it if you're a beginner, like I.
Or if you found that you've been prone to injury with some of the higher mileage plans. Finally, you want to prepare yourself with the right information. Listening to this podcast is a good place to start. You'll want to surround yourself with good information so that you're more likely to have a great marathon experience. I recommend websites like marathonguide.com and halfmarathons.net. As you narrow down your race choices, it'll be helpful to read some of the race reviews and visit the race website for more details. Also, if you haven't gotten a copy of our book, Marathon Training Academy's Official Guide to Running Your First Marathon, I would encourage you to do that too.
You can find that over at mtaofficialguide.com. So, Angie, thank you for helping us think about all these considerations when it comes to choosing a race. I'm sure that everybody will be more educated now in their race selection.
And we'll have a list of these basic principles over on our blog if you didn't get it all, you know, just by listening to it.
Okay, so now it is time for the Marathon Train Academy quick tip. And Angie's going to tell you what you can do with your used running shoes.
That's right. As you know, you should be replacing your running shoes about every 400 to 500 miles. And so if you're like me, you start to get a backlog of running shoes in your closet. You know, the outsides look okay, but you really can't run in them anymore. So I usually use a pair to cross train in or kick around in, but you can actually be using your old running shoes for good. There are some different organizations that donate your used shoes to places around the world. There are also places that recycle your shoes into a material that makes athletic and playground surfaces. So some of these organizations include Soles for Souls, Hope Runs, Shoes for Africa, Nike Reuse a Shoe, and One World Running. And we'll have a list of these and the websites at our blog.
And if you'd like more information on running and marathon training, please visit us at marathontrainingacademy.com. And while you're there, you can download a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We want you to remember that you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.